This podcast has been initiated and funded by Novartis UK. My name is Dr. Vincent McGovern. I'm a general practitioner in Northern Ireland with a special interest in asthma. I also hold 3 part-time clinical assistantships, 1 in adult chest medicine at Belfast City Hospital, 1 in paediatric asthma at the Royal Belfast Hospital for Sick Children, and 1 in accident and emergency medicine at the Ulster Hospital. I'm joined today by 2 other clinicians in a series of 3 podcasts to talk about asthma.
I'm Steve Holmes, a general practitioner in Somerset and was involved in the National Review of Asthma Deaths Audit, and I'm currently a member of the BTS Asthma Specialist Group.
I'm Rob Niven. I'm a senior lecturer and consultant from Manchester Foundation Trust. I am clinical lead for the Northwest Severe Asthma Network, and I'm on the steering committee for the SIGN BTS Asthma Guidelines.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Rob. You're both very welcome. In this podcast number 2 of the series, we're going to talk about the National Review of Asthma Deaths report, which was published in May 2014. And we're also going to look at current asthma management guidelines. So if we start off, Steve, by thinking about the NRAD report, National Review of Asthma Deaths, Why Asthma Still Kills. Can you tell us some of the key findings of this report?
Thank you, Vinti. Yes, first of all, it's the biggest report we've had, biggest investigation we've had into deaths of people with asthma. It looked at every asthma death in the UK over a 1-year period between February 2012 and January 2013 and looked in detail at about 195 people who died from asthma. 45% of those people died without seeking medical assistance in their last attack. They presumably didn't have a personalised asthma action plan. 43% were under specialist supervision during the final year, and 47% had been previously admitted during that last year.
And I think, Steve, that's a really important point. One of the key facts is that anybody who's had a hospital admission probably should be being assessed for the factors causing their asthma. We're seeing that it's a risk for future death, and we need to make sure that all of these patients have at least a primary or secondary care assessment to work out why a hospital admission occurred.
I'd agree strongly with you there, Rob. I think people who've had severe attacks do need significant input to reduce that.
So the NRAD report, National Review of Asthma Deaths, didn't just look at why and the situation around why people still die from asthma. It also delivered a series of key recommendations so that the situation would improve in the future.
Yes, probably worthwhile just highlighting some of the issues around that, primarily prescribing and very pertinent to primary care. 39% of those that died had had more than 12 short-acting beta agonist salbutamol type inhalers in the last year, far too many. Indeed, 4% had had more than 50 of these inhalers. There are now systems in place, I hope, in virtually every practice system to alert us to those high-risk patients at risk of death. There was still widely recognised poor compliance with inhaled corticosteroids and a few patients who were on a long-acting beta agonist drug without being on an inhaled corticosteroid at the same time in combination. Recommendations from NICE from many years ago that we should always combine those. So there was plenty of key learning from that. And I think the other key primary care learning point was that somebody who'd had more than 2 courses of systemic corticosteroids or been admitted or been to A&E in the last year should be considered very strongly for specialist review.
Rob, key recommendations from the report that you feel in secondary care were particularly relevant?
So from our perspective, it's about who should be being referred for specialist review, and that is about those patients who have had high-risk events previously or are having frequent courses of oral corticosteroids. Clearly, there's a lot of stuff, as Steve highlighted, that could be sorted out in primary care if we can get these patients in front of somebody who is going to focus on adherence and inhaled steroid adherence particularly.
So the NRAD report, National Review of Asthma Deaths, clearly highlighted the need to identify poorly controlled asthmatic patients and give us clear guidance as to what the description or those patients look like and who is most at risk. But how do we use the current asthma guidelines when we identify these patients? In podcast one, we clearly identified the need to do the basics well, question the diagnosis, look at things like inhaler technique and compliance. But when we identify patients who may need more treatment, what do the current asthma clinical guidelines advise us to do?
So sadly, we are in a period now where we're going to have a period of confusion and uncertainty for clinicians because we have two sets of guidance which in parts conflict in their advice. And at a time when we really want to be focusing on good control and getting patients safe with a reducing the risk of mortality, as we found from NRAD, I believe these two sets of guidance are going to cause confusion and make this hard for clinicians.
I guess I'd agree with you there, Rob. I think you probably have fewer guidelines than we do. Unfortunately, we also have guidance that comes out from a lot of our local hospitals and from our pharmaceutical advisors and other local groups, all adding slightly different flavours into the way in which we manage it. And that just adds to the confusion for clinicians in trying to manage asthma.
So what would the message be for primary care from a therapeutic point of view, Steve? Can we address the issue of short-acting beta-2 agonists, which was so highlighted in the NRAD report?
I guess we should be able to do that fairly simply. I think we know that asthma is an inflammatory condition, and we know that in asthma, the fundamental core part of treatment is an inhaled corticosteroid. Short-acting beta agonists will relieve muscle spasm, but they're not going to treat the underlying inflammation. And I guess what we have to be really fundamental about is making sure that if we're making a diagnosis of asthma, our patient gets the core treatment that will treat that.
And that was a key message from the last BTS sign asthma guidelines advice, yep, that patients should no longer be managed on a blue inhaler as a sole treatment.
Yes, I think that was fairly clear in the BTS sign guidance. And I think most people would agree with that, in that, again, it goes back to understanding of what the fundamentals of asthma are and getting that basic treatment right.
And personally, I would totally agree with you, but the NICE guidance which has come out doesn't follow through and support that new step that was introduced in the BTS sign guidance of focusing on prevention. They still allow sole use of SABR in their guidance, and this is one of the areas where the two sets of guidance sadly conflict.
So this will be a clear lack of clarity, which we're trying to address in this podcast, so that we're all off the same hymn sheet and we probably only need one hymn sheet. So can we move it on then with the current advice? When patients are not well controlled on a low-dose inhaled steroids, can I ask you, Rob, about the varying options for add-on therapies?
So thanks, Vinci. This is a territory where it gets much more confusing because there's two sets of guidance, because BTS sign have stuck with the traditional method of adding in long-acting bronchodilator, which is convenient because you can still use a single inhaler for these patients. It fits with international guidance. And so that's the advice from them. The new sets of NICE guidance actually introduces leukotriene antagonists on top of moderate dose of inhaled steroids as the next step. And then only after that, long-acting bronchodilators. And they've done that on a health economic model.
Steve, what levels of treatment in primary care do you think it would be reasonable to be applying before we consider referring for help from secondary care?
I think that is variable. Some of my colleagues are very experienced in the management of asthma. Some of them are much less confident, and it does depend on your clinical confidence. If you're not confident, you should be looking for additional help. What the guidance would suggest is on the higher doses of inhaled corticosteroids. So that's roughly, in the BTS sign, that's clearly highlighted with the different groups. We should be thinking, if we've got a long-acting beta agonist in again with your ICS, additions on top of that, we should be thinking about specialist referral. And if we go to the level above that, that's high dose inhaled corticosteroid, possibly with oral steroid courses, that is an absolute must. We have to have specialist input into that type of situation.
So perhaps I could add a point there, Vinti. Both sets of guidelines do agree that long-acting muscarinic antagonists have a role. I think with a surgery that's confident and comfortable with asthma treatment, perfectly reasonable to add these in routinely before considering referral on. But I completely agree with Steve. The key issue here is patients getting on to frequent bursts of oral steroids. And if you've had more than two courses of oral steroids in the last 12 months, those are people who should be being referred.
Okay, thank you for that. So we've had the NRAD report. We've had it around for 3 years, highlighting why patients still die with asthma. We've got regularly updated asthma guidelines from various sources. Steve, from the primary care perspective, what would your key learning points to take away from those advice documents be?
Okay, from a learning point of view, what have I picked up from NRAD? It's more than two courses of oral corticosteroids or admitted equals specialist referral. It's 12 short-acting beta agonist inhalers or per year or 6 in 6 months equals urgent review. It's no long-acting beta agonist inhaler on its own in asthma. Other than that, it's back to the fundamentals of personalised asthma action plans, getting our reviews appropriate, adherence, concordance, and checking inhaler devices.
And Rob, from the secondary care perspective, what are your key messages from NRAD and current guidelines?
I think from NRAD, Steve's covered it completely. And it shouldn't be a surprise that primary and specialist care are completely agreeing on this concept. We really need to focus on preventive strategies and avoiding excessive use of short-acting bronchodilator. Sadly, despite doing that, we've still got people who are dying of asthma 3 years on from NRAD. And alongside that, we have guidelines that are conflicting.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Rob. We hope this discussion has helped you to know more about the factors associated with why people still die from asthma and why people continue to unnecessarily die from asthma. And we also hope we've provided a degree of clarity as to where the current asthma guidelines fit in advising us which patients require more treatment and what those treatments may look like. Adverse events should be reported. Reporting forms and information can be found at www.mhra.gov.uk/yellowcard. For the technically minded amongst you, the job code for these podcasts is RES17R035. The date of preparation of these podcasts is November 2017.